Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. And again, I'm your host, Lauren, and you're listening to episode 67, Preconception Prep with Steph Lowe. Steph, our guest today, is the founder of The Natural Nutritionist and the author of Low Carb, Healthy Fat Nutrition book. For the past 10 years, she's been spreading a positive message about real food and the incredible effect that it has on performance. And what we've talked about today in the episode is more into the preconception, becoming a mama type of healthy eating and lifestyle tips. But Steph specializes in creating your healthiest pregnancy with her signature 3-month preconception cleanse. This is a personalized journey best guided by an experienced practitioner and is so much more than just taking folate. If you have more than 3 months, then she's your gal to start now. Often there is a deeper gut rebalancing that is needed, and as you will pass this on, your microbiome, to your future child, and the more time you have, the better. And we get into all of this in today's episode as well. But if you have less than 3 months, there's no need to worry. She can help you set many different foundations for a happy pregnancy and happy baby. The work does not stop with the positive pregnancy test. The work continues during pregnancy, breastfeeding, and beyond. More about what we talked today in today's episode is how Steph went from this low-calorie, low-fat dieting teen to now the beautiful mama and founder of The Natural Nutritionist, her own birth story and preconception prep, why getting off the pill or stopping contraception is not enough, prenatals, should you be really taking them? Should you start prepping before you even start to conceive? The importance of your microbiome for everything conception, birth, and postpartum, why you might actually need 6 months plus to prep for conception. Is eating for two really true? How your diet will change all throughout your birth journey, and so much more. Without further ado, please enjoy episode 67, Preconception Prep with Steph Lowe. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. And again, I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, and you get to listen and learn that your body is not actually in your way, it's leading your way. And I'm so excited to present to you guys our beautiful guest today, Steph Lowe. And we are going to talk about preconception and pregnancy and all about nutrition and health and everything around that. And that's really your body leading the way. So I'm so excited to jump into that. But welcome, Steph, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You're so welcome. Steph is the founder of The Natural Nutritionist and also the author of Low Carb, Healthy Fat Nutrition book. And for the past 10 years, she's been providing a positive message about real food and the incredible effect it has on performance and preconception and pregnancy, which is what we're going to get into today, which is awesome. We're recording this during the coronavirus, and I feel like there might be a lot of coronavirus babies because we're all inside, but I know a lot of people that are trying to right now are thinking about it. And I know this would be such a poignant topic, but I would love, before we get into that juicy topic, hear about your own story about how you got into nutrition, but also, you know, your own birth story as well and how that kind of shifted your focus and how you show up for your clients.
Yeah, awesome questions. So I first became interested in nutrition as a teenager. It was with a slightly different focus. You know, back then I wanted to lose weight and I set myself the task of losing weight, but I really dived into what was like the research back then, which we know was, you know, very focused on being low calorie and low fat. So of course that's what I did, you know, it wasn't a very healthy way to lose weight. And whilst I did lose about 20 kilos, my period disappeared. I had a lot of mental health and mood challenges, and I really wasn't happy. And that unfortunate irony was that I thought that being skinny was going to equate to happiness. And I certainly learned the hard way that it didn't. You know, looking back, I can see what happened to my health, because we know that fats are such an important building block of our hormones and of our brain. And, you know, of course, they play a really important role in managing our mood and supporting things like anxiety and depression. But I didn't know that back then. I was quite young and naive. But my mum took me to a dietitian, and I remember sitting in her room in her office thinking to myself, wow, this is this lady's job. She sits here and gets to talk about food. And it was a real light bulb moment for me back then to start the journey of understanding what it would look like for me to become a nutritionist. You know, it took quite a while, but I had what would be quite a big awakening when a dear friend of mine encouraged me to go gluten-free. His theory was that my mood challenges and my depression were because my body was quite inflamed. You know, at the time, I didn't really go into the detail, but I was pretty desperate. So I was willing to give anything a try. So I quit gluten. You know, that was the first step. But for me, the experience of that was really night and day in how different I felt, you know, over a period of time as my body started to heal and my gut started to heal and the inflammation started to resolve. But because I felt so different, it really inspired me to take a deeper dive into understanding the healing power of whole food. And some people roll their eyes at that because the food space is very confusing at the moment. But we know that we are what we eat and we are what we digest and absorb. So we absolutely have to be starting with the foundations of how we eat and what we eat and, of course, what our microbiome is doing at the same time. So, you know, I was so inspired by that personal journey and everything that I'd learned along the way that I went back to uni to study nutrition at a postgraduate level. Graduated in 2009, started the Natural Nutritionist, and this has been what I get to call a job every day since then. So it's been incredible. I love that I've got that personal journey, and now that I get to call this work and help so many other people all over the world experience that you know, real food is where it begins.
And that's why I always ask about these backstories, because I love hearing how people just like naturally flow into what they're passionate about and that they get to call a job every single day. And, you know, I'm sure so many of us have started out like that. I know I did when my own healthy journey was, I just looked in the mirror and I didn't like myself. I didn't like the way I looked. And I would have loved to say that it was some like higher calling of like, I want to take care and respect myself. But so many of us enter into all of this in a way different mindset. And for me, the exact same thing. Gluten was, once I cut that out emotionally, I had no idea like how it affected me until I cut it out. And like, I just felt my mood stabilize and my skin cleared up and just little things like that, that I never knew growing up that, you know, gluten-free was not a thing for, at least in my mind, for up until like, what, 10 years ago or something maybe. But looking back and even just the photos of, even though people might've been skinnier in high school or college, but just like, I call it like the gluten, like puffy face kind of, like you just feel like you were just whiter in a way. But it's so awesome to hear everybody's story about how they got into do the work that they do today, which kind of, you know, brings us further into your story. Now you have a baby, you have a daughter, and I'm sure that's inspired you to figure out how to help women, you know, preconceiving, but also during pregnancy, because it's a stressful time, but add in the cravings and I'm sure everything else that happens hormonally when you're pregnant, it's like whatever healthy idea you had before probably can easily go out the window.
Yes, for sure. But, like you said, it definitely starts with preconception, and it's not really something that we're taught. You know, when, let's say, the normal trajectory is that a female decides she wants to conceive. So the two things she probably does is thinks about coming off the pill or her contraception if she was taking something, and two, going to see her doctor. And that conversation really extends so far as, okay, yeah, you need to take Elevate, or you need to look at taking a prenatal for about a month before you start. Many people don't do that, of course. There are pregnancies that are a little unplanned and prenatals aren't taken, or they're not taken until a little bit later on. But essentially what I'm trying to say is that the conversation doesn't go very far. And so we aren't really taught to consider what we might do for 6 months or even longer before we're wanting to have a baby. So my journey was a little bit different in that I wasn't taking the pill, I wasn't taking any form of contraception, but I knew that I wanted to set things up over a number of years, but more specifically in that six-month window preconception. So my husband and I had worked out, we had worked out exactly what month we wanted to fall pregnant. And so back from that, around 6 months is this what I did, and certainly what I recommend my clients to do, is really start to understand what your microbiome is doing. We know that with birth, with natural birth, we pass our microbiome onto our baby. And so, of course, the state of our gut, the quality, the robust nature of our microbiome is really, really important, because it sets up our baby's immune system from day zero. And then, of course, there's a whole host of benefits with that in terms of, breastfeeding and their ongoing food preferences, their transition to solids, and so on and so forth. So it's everything. We know that all health starts in the gut. So, of course, as the mother and the father, we really need to be looking at what we can do in that 6 months as a lead-in. And I say 6 months because you might need time. Certainly if you have been on the pill, or if you haven't been looking at your microbiome, then, giving yourself a month, it may not be enough time. So we want to take any of the stress out of that lead-in. And so having a little bit more time can be advantageous. So what I did, and what I get the majority of my clients to do, is some microbiome testing. So we remove all of the guesswork around wondering what our gut looks like, and, is the ecosystem healthy? Is there inflammation in there? And all, the guesswork that comes with not knowing. So it's a simple stool test that you do in the privacy of your own home. It goes back to the lab, and about 3 to 4 weeks later, you get this amazing report that tells you everything. Now, there are lots of different tests that you can do, but the way the technology is evolving these days is that we tend to preference something called metagenomic sequencing. So it's only a really small sample, and it looks at the DNA of what's in your gut, so bacteria, archaea, fungi, etc., and also what metabolites they're producing. So whether there's that beautiful anti-inflammatory environment or a pro-inflammatory environment. And then, of course, you can work with a practitioner to create a plan over the next 6 months to really rebalance things and optimize your microbiome before you fall pregnant.
Beautiful. And I'm assuming, our bodies are not separate systems. It's all interconnected. And like you ended with saying, is that an environment that promotes inflammation or that decreases it? And I'm sure that has a huge role to play with your reproductive system as well. Our microbiome, I feel like we know so much more now, but I know there's so much more we don't know about it. And I think you probably know the statistics better than I do, but it's like, what is it, like 3 times the amount of cells in our gut and our body are like foreign cells, or not actually our own cells, whether that's like bacteria or fungi or whatever. Which I think is awesome to think that there's like more than just us in our body. It's a whole ecosystem, if you will. So you rebalance the gut, and how does that directly affect falling pregnant or getting pregnant? That I know how healthy gut can clear up so many things, but I would love to hear, like, how is that directly correlated? How does that help? Does it promote, like, relax and restore for the rest of your body to properly function? Could you kind of dive into all of that connection and how that helps?
Yeah, it's a good question because, of course, we start with the foundation of the gut, but it is going to have a really powerful flow-on effect to every issue that you might be having. So let's say there are some real hormonal issues. Like, that can look so different depending on the client or the female. But if there is amenorrhea, so a period that's gone offline, maybe it's really heavy periods or lots of PMS, then yeah, we always want to start with the gut to rebalance the menstrual cycle. But of course, there might be other work that you do if your hormones are that real sort of Achilles heel for yourself. But definitely if your gut is pro-inflammatory, your body will be in a state of fight and flight, right? Or fight, flight, freeze. So you'll be quite sympathetic dominant. That's that stressful state where essentially from an evolutionary perspective, your hormones do go offline. It's not the healthy environment to create a baby. And stress is the big thing that we have in, 2020 and in the West. A lot of people are suffering from chronic stress and probably not truthfully really appreciating how huge the impact of that is. And so, yeah, we really need to be looking at getting our body into this beautiful anti-inflammatory state so that we are promoting the balance between the sympathetic dominance and, or the sympathetic nervous system rather, and the parasympathetic nervous system. Because stress is fine in moderation. It's when there's the absence of relaxation that we have an issue. So it's really about creating balance in the body. But maybe, the female or the listener doesn't have any kind of obvious health issues, but certainly if we took a look at the top level, if we're looking after our gut, then we're going to be absorbing more nutrients. So, something so simple like our dietary folate, which we all hear about in these prenatals and in these elevates, but we forget that we can find folate from whole foods like dark leafy greens and nuts and seeds and organ meat and dietary folate. Like, making sure we have adequate stores of dietary folate is so critical preconception, because folate's needed in that first trimester for brain and central nervous system and spinal cord development. So we're preventing spina bifida and birth defects. So, having that optimal microbiome means that we can absorb all of our nutrients. And folate is just one example, but you can see why, optimizing your gut is so important, because we can eat lots of amazing food, but if we're not absorbing it, it's essentially a waste. So we are what we eat, but we are what we digest and absorb so much.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And I think talking about parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, even for me, every meal I sit down, take a few deep breaths, connect to my heart. And I don't say a prayer or anything, but I just take the moment to calm down whatever else is going on, because in the West, I feel like we're just going. And even if we have a healthy kale salad or a green smoothie or whatever, if we're in that fight or flight and trying to eat, just the same thing if our gut is messed up. I found for myself and a lot of people I've worked with is that we need to make sure that we're overall in that state of rest and restore, and not doing three things at once while we're trying to eat or eat on the go. I mean, things happen. I understand we have to eat on the go, but really taking the time to eat our food, to chew the food, just experience the senses of it, because fight or flight, we are addicted to. And I'm sure you could talk more about that too. It just, we don't realize how that affects us day to day. And the first things that shut down are digestion, reproductive systems, these non-necessary systems that our body used to shut down in order to fight, flee or hide. But now we don't have that dinosaur chasing us. We just might be angry in traffic or get an angry email. And I find so many things, especially around pregnancy, is just like an opportunity for you not only to heal your gut, but heal maybe how you look at the world and how you live in the world. Do you work at all with the kind of the mindfulness aspect of this too? Because it's a huge transition, and to think about, getting ready to bring a life into this world and the connection with that fight or flight, I'm sure, really affects the pregnancy or even conceiving as well.
Well, it's absolutely huge. Like a few things, like I couldn't agree with you more about those healthy food behaviors. And I can't tell you the number of people that have had like total digestive issues resolved by acknowledging that if they're over here in fight or flight, their digestion is literally offline. Their gut is shutting down. So then they take a few breaths, like that beautiful transition from sympathetic to parasympathetic via diaphragmatic breathing, and they don't get bloated or they don't have, you know, these food intolerances that they were carrying around as a label for decades, or they don't have, you know, constipation or whatever it might be. So, you know, as a nutritionist, I find myself going back to the basics all the time, because we're in this society or in this space where we're really magic pill orientated. It's about the latest supplement or the latest quick fix, when we don't build a house from the roof, right? We build a house from the foundations. And the foundations, like, yeah, just literally looking at your food to stimulate your gallbladder to produce bile, your pancreas to produce enzymes, and then chewing. Like everyone, when I tell them that you've got to chew every mouthful 20 times, they lose their mind. They look at me like I've got two heads, because we're so used to inhaling our food because it's a low priority. We're busy, we're scrolling. Like you said, we're in traffic, etc. So we have to acknowledge those foundations. I think that's so important that you mentioned that. And then the other thing when we look at pregnancy is, certainly my experience was that it's kind of, it's like treated like a medical condition. There's a lot of fear around it. There's a lot of, you know, like you're unwell. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like, I know there are people that have it really tough and they get, you know, a HG for the whole pregnancy and they're hospitalized. And, you know, I'd never wish that on anyone. But for the most part, it can be a beautiful experience. And certainly if you have been running on empty, or if you have been really sympathetic dominant all the time, then taking that time to acknowledge that that is not the right environment for you to be conceiving in is up there with, you know, the number one goal. And creating some mindfulness and some meditation or some yoga practices, barefoot walks in nature, like whatever fills up your cup to continue to create that beautiful balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic is so a huge part of it. Because you can, it is possible to feel really good in pregnancy, but I think doing the work, like taking some time, is really important so that you can have the best experience possible.
Yeah, you're definitely, I completely agree, and inspiring me. I don't have any children yet, but I'm like, when the time is ready, I know that it's possible. And so many people look at it, you know, as this disease or the fear of it all, or that. Even I know some people, you know, that there's hypnobirthing where a lot of people, you know, can even disassociate from that pain. And I know that there's people who have had orgasmic births, which is unheard of to me, but it's amazing because it's this natural process that our body is designed to do. But I there's so much fear and like, I don't know, it just feels very sterile when I know that it's just this beautiful natural experience of life. And yeah, like talking about microbiome, you are jump started once you are, if you are birthed vaginally, that you have this beautiful jump start to your own microbiome. If women are listening to this and they're like, oh my goodness, I've been trying for months, I want to keep trying, I don't know what to do, what if I don't have this time, but I'm ready, how can we help them become their body to a prime state if they don't maybe have 6 months and they're ready to start trying?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a good question. And not everyone has 6 months. Like, I have plenty of people that come to me that have only got 1 month or they're already trying. And that's cool. We can totally work with that. What I would probably do first, actually, is have a look at what their prenatal is. Because certainly if they've been trying for some time, you know, 10 times out of 10, they're already taking a prenatal because they've either been told to do that by their mother or their doctor. Like I said, they've gone and had that conversation already with their primary care practitioner. Now, there, I have an issue with some prenatals because unfortunately the more conventional brands, at least in the West, use folic acid, which is synthetic, nothing like dietary folate, and about 50% of the population have a genetic polymorphism, which means they don't tolerate that folate. So they don't convert it to the more active forms of folinic acid and methylfolate, and it therefore can build up and be quite damaging to the fetus. Anyone that has had recurrent miscarriages, we definitely need to be looking at their prenatal. So the genetic SNP that we look at is MTHFR. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's a gene where if you do have that polymorphism, you shouldn't be taking folate. Of course, you need to be taking the activated version. Like I said earlier, it's really important in the lead up to and in trimester one to prevent things like spina bifida and neural tube defects. But we need to be making sure that we're taking the highest quality. So it's not Elevate or it's not, you know, respectfully Blackmores. It's probably going to be a practitioner only brand. Like in Australia, we use Eagle or there's Orthoplex white label. But essentially, no matter where you are in the world, you're looking for like a folinic acid or a methylfolate version of folic acid. So I'd be doing that with like as a first step, because that's a really easy change. You're still going to be taking your prenatal, you're just making sure you're taking a better version. You know, if you haven't done genetic testing, which or blood testing, it's like you don't really even need to know that. There's just less risk by taking synthetic folate. But of course, and especially if you have had recurrent miscarriages, I'd be seeing a doctor and asking for MTHFR as a minimum so that you can understand what might have been happening with your prenatal. And so I think that's a really important part. But, you know, second to that, again, very foundational, but how do we create a robust microbiome? Fiber, dietary fiber. There's no magic pills. There's no magic potions. Of course, there's a lot of supplementary things we can do. But if we look at all of the clinical research coming out on how to create a diverse microbiome, and we know that diversity, like so good to great diversity in the gut, correlates with good to great health. And what feeds our microbiome? Fiber. So then we could just be so simple in looking at how many serves of fruit and vegetables we're having per day and really starting to make sure that that's our preference, that's our priority, rather than it being more of the carbs or grains or the food pyramid type diet that we still see being encouraged in the West.
Yeah, I feel like we need to turn that upside down sometimes. Oh, yeah. All the way upside down.
Upside down. Yeah. Our food pyramid upside down. Yeah, yeah, in principle, for sure.
Yeah, I know in the U.S., like, people don't, it's very low. It's like less, like 2 out of 8 people get the recommended amount of fruits and vegetable servings every day. And not only that, but like, the supplements we take, or if we're buying processed food or more conventionally farm foods, you're not getting that deep nutrient dense food as if you would if you got something, you know, organic or like locally grown. I love what you said about the prenatal, because supplement quality is, if anything, just a generic supplement is so key, especially I know a lot of stuff, if it's not naturally sourced, a lot of different supplements or vitamins, your body can't actually process. It's just going to just pass it through. And a lot of times I know people take cheap multivitamins and then they go to their bathroom and their pee is like neon yellow and they don't know why. It's like, well, maybe we should look about what you're actually putting into your body. But you know, whether a woman starts with you 6 months in advance or if she's kind of has a smaller time frame, how does your support in working with somebody who maybe successfully gets pregnant, and how do you kind of, or do you work with people through end of pregnancy on continually helping with their biome and having a healthy pregnancy?
Yeah, definitely. So probably one more thing that we would do pre is blood tests to make sure that we're not unaware of any deficiencies. So blood tests are interesting because we've got these reference ranges and everyone's familiar with seeing those reference ranges on their printout or on their report. But reference ranges are designed to exclude a disease or a deficiency. They're not really about optimal health, right? So when you work with someone that's more holistic, whether it's myself or an integrative GP, we tend to nearly always have quite a different reference range that we want you to be in. So, you know, we look at folate quite differently. Of course, I'd want to be looking at iron stores, you know, vitamin D, B12. There's so much that we really want to make sure we're optimizing so that, you know, of course, fixing the gut's going to make us absorb our nutrients better. So that will improve our results on a blood test. But there might be tweaks that we need to make to our intake, you know, how much wild caught fish are we having? How much grass-fed or pasture-raised meat are we having? Do we even eat meat? What are our alternatives? So like little dietary tweaks that can optimize our health and that therefore our pregnancy. You know, as we move into trimester one, if you do have morning sickness, like that certainly wasn't my experience, but certainly getting the right plan in place to help stabilize your blood sugar is so important because it's really easy just to turn to toast and Vegemite or toast and jam or whatever it might be when you've got either morning sickness, all day sickness, or just cravings that are usually, you know, certainly more common in trimester one. So then we were talking about what do we do to feed our microbiome when we eat fruits and vegetables. And so it's then also really easy in the first trimester to really not be eating many veggies at least. And I meet many people who are only having, you know, maybe one or two cups at dinner, when really on a good day, we should be having, you know, one to two cups with every meal. So that would be, you know, minimum of three, maybe even six cups of veggies per day. And so it's really important to have a bit of a plan with, you know, how you can navigate that start to really acknowledge that one, you're not eating for two. And two, it's not a free road. Like I meet a lot of people who unfortunately kind of look at pregnancy as that time where they can eat what they want and they just relax. And intellectually, if we really just top level think about that, it doesn't make sense because this is a time when you're growing a human. So you need nutrients more than ever. And then imagine if you just eat white food, what do you think your baby's going to want when you transition to solids at 6 months of age? Like white food, you will make your journey to solids, you know, likely quite challenging versus when you're eating your fruits and vegetables, anti-inflammatory. Of course, you might be eating more carbs, but your carbohydrates might come from bananas and sweet potatoes or a beautiful buckwheat gluten-free sourdough or something like that. There's ways to make it work so that you can find that balance, and your nutrition will look different in each trimester, and certainly it will look different from preconception and when you're nursing if you do and so on, but you've still got to find a way to prioritize real food so that you look after yourself, so that you're looking after your growing human. And then as you move into that sort of magic 20-week mark, you don't end up with deficiencies because your diet or your gut has been inadequate. So it's going to transform your whole pregnancy experience. So yeah, I think certainly having a plan in place is so important.
Oh yeah. With anything in life, having a plan to be able to like focus and execute. And like there's days where you don't want to stick to it, but you realize how much better you're feeling. And when you have the plan, it's easy to recourse correct back to that straight line. I would love to hear kind of, you know, nutritionally, I know I love that you mentioned that you're not actually eating for two, because I hear that misconception a lot. But I've also heard with breastfeeding, that's when you're actually eating more or taking in more calories because you're producing your breast milk. What's going on there? I mean, I don't think it's also not an easy ticket just to eat however you want to eat. But, you know, based on your diet's going to change, like you said, preconception, pregnancy, each trimester, but also post-pregnancy, postpartum. How would you eat for breastfeeding? And I'm assuming it's going to be different each time.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we talk about the eating for two myth, certainly you eat often. You know, I think one thing that certainly in my world, I don't encourage a lot of snacking for, like, say, a normal client. So outside of preconception, we're sort of more looking at three meals a day. But then as we move into preconception, and certainly as we move through pregnancy, we're going to find that eating more frequently is more suitable. So the biggest shift will be, of course, there'll be a slight increase in calories if you add in, you know, one snack per day in trimester one, and then a further increase in calories if you add a second snack in trimester two, and so on and so forth. But you're only going up by like 200 to 500 calories per trimester. So it's not even a whole meal. So it's certainly not doubling your intake, which eating for two would imply. So that's, I don't know where that came from. It's very outdated, but some people still do like to believe that, or at least use that as an excuse. So it's a small gradual increase over the course of each trimester. But then, of course, everyone's different. I meet people who aren't really that hungry in pregnancy. And so it's about that balancing act between, you know, making sure you are getting enough. Certainly if you're not used to snacking, that could be quite an adjustment. But yeah, you definitely need more carbohydrates when you're moving into that, or moving through the trimesters. So that's probably the biggest shift that we see. But like I mentioned earlier, we want to be prioritizing whole food carbs wherever we can. And then when we're nursing, well, what's milk? Milk is a fat and a protein. Small amount of carbohydrates, of course, but we need to be making sure we're eating a lot of protein. So what I find, especially in vegetarian and vegan mamas, and women, if they're used to eating smaller meals, they're often not having enough protein. So that's something that we tend to eat more of to help our breast milk production. And yeah, our calories could be even higher than in trimester three. I personally had quite a lot of hunger for the whole year, and I don't even think now I've been not nursing for nearly 3 months, I don't even think it's back to normal yet. It's like even I can see my hormones are still adjusting. So it's hard to tell someone to be intuitive when they're not, when they've spent forever, you know, on a diet or just like not really knowing what to do. But pregnancy can be a really beautiful time to, rather than have rules, just be a little bit more organic with how you eat. But when you do choose quality, then you will have blood sugar control. You will manage your cravings, and you will obviously be nourishing you and baby or babies. So we have to prioritize quality because the flow and effect of that is so positive. The stress conversation is relevant the whole time though, because, you know, if we're talking about nursing, stress will, you know, it will just reduce, or it will even stop your milk supply. So you've got to create a beautiful home environment, focus on, you know, what you're trying to achieve rather than your weight loss or whatever that might be for you in that postpartum period. Knowing that it can take time for your hormones to rebalance, and, you know, like, there's so much going on in that time of your life. It's really a time to be nourishing yourself and creating that home environment so that you and baby can thrive.
And I know women who have done that, you know, my friends, I've seen all sorts of scales of that, not, you know, stressing out about losing the weight or just creating that healthy environment where even family members are helping them, because especially the first few weeks when you're home, like, you're healing and your body is reconfiguring a lot of stuff. You know, no, there's no more baby inside, and there's like, it's magical what the human body can do, like, really. But focusing on how much you can gain through this experience, I've noticed, whether it's postpartum or even just like any weight loss journey, when we focus on what we don't want, what we want to lose, rather than, you know, just like you said, parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system, when we can get into that relax and restore and really take care of ourselves, you know, food, but home environment, everything, that's when your body is going to be promoted to have optimal health and really regain at its own time, but in a beautiful time, how you're supposed to feel. And yeah, I don't, that's another thing.
the other phrase of like losing the baby weight. I think that needs to all, speaking of diet culture, that does not need to be in our vernacular at all. You know, it's sad to see, but I think it's just another symptom.
I think it's in the West.
Yeah.
Like if we look at cultures around the world, they are so good at the fourth trimester, mm-hmm. or they are so good at the first 40 days. You know, the mum is essentially like waited on hand and foot by family members and their tribe, and there's beautiful meals. It's like a real celebration of life. Yet in the West, or at least in my experience, like I was like, going back to work, you know, it was ridiculous if I look back. And of course I ate well, but I didn't have that support unit. Like it really is focused on in many cultures all around the world. There's an incredible book called The Postnatal Depletion Cure. And I sobbed when I read the first chapter, because the first chapter goes through examples of cultures all over the world and what they do in that fourth trimester or the first 40 days. And it's so beautiful. And we've just lost that. And certainly as you know, when I have my second child, I'll be taking more time off. Like I was fine, but in hindsight, I wish I didn't go back to work when Grace was 8 weeks old. I want to celebrate that fourth trimester more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's beautiful. I know my friends, who's Korean, her mom had made this beautiful seaweed soup for her all the time. That was very healing and nourishing. And it is just so interesting to see how different cultures, and then the West, we've kind of just like get back to work. A lot of places have maternity leave, but they are very short, you know, 8 to 10 weeks max. And some women, I think, also want to get back to work, and that's okay too. And I think, you know, you need to figure out what's best for you, but realize that this is not going to be forever, and this opportunity to connect with your child and just like, I'm sure, just soak up every moment with them, even though it's not all rainbows and butterflies, but it's just this one time where you can just be with them instead of going and doing more, which I know I am easily subject to that.
Same. It's like, you know, cultural conditioning in the West, right? It's like do more, achieve more, consume more, buy more. And, you know, then you're a mom and you're like, stop. And like, you can't, because you just don't know how. So it's a whole new process, which, you know, for me personally, like I finally committed to a 2x20-minute meditation practice. So twice a day. And that was where I had the biggest sort of transformation. And I'm not saying I'm there yet, because I know it's a journey, but I can find it much easier to sit still now. Whereas like when I was a new mom, it was almost impossible.
Yeah. 20 minutes a day. Like, you know, if you can ask for help, whether it's your partner or somebody else, for you to get that time away to yourself, I think that's so necessary. Mm. Even child or no child, to be able to refocus, enter that parasympathetic nervous system, rest and restore. Because I always say this quote a lot in this show, but Einstein said, you can't solve a problem at the same level of consciousness that created it. And when we're just going and in our heads all day long, you know, it seems like life is just getting thrown at us left and right. And I'm sure with being a mama, it's the same thing. But when we're able to kind of take a little bit more of a bird's eye view, whether consciously or just because we're in that more relaxed state, that's when you can see, oh, I can move in this direction, I can move in that direction, and not get so, you know, rabbit hole down that like worry or anxiety train, which I know like pregnancy and motherhood, but also preconception, you can really get tied up in that, you know, a lot of your own programs. And am I not good at, you know, am I not healthy enough, or I'm not womanly enough to be able to hold, to carry a baby? There's so many things. Or am I not be able to do this? And just the stress of it all, I can't imagine. But what an opportunity for you to show up for yourself before your baby even is here, if that becomes a problem. So I'm so glad that you, we're all continuing to learn. I think that you said it's a journey. It's not a destination. If it was a destination, I don't think we would be here. We would just know it all. But thank you so much for coming on the show today. I learned a lot, and I know our listeners are going to want to learn more. And so awesome to hear how effective whole foods are in any aspect of your health. Because I think you're right. The diet culture and just nutrition right now is confusing. And there's so many people saying this or that and this, but how to best support your body to create another body, another being. So thank you again so much, Steph. Was there anything else you wanted to cover before we wrapped up today?
Oh, look, it's always so much to cover, like in terms of the whole journey. But no, I think it's more just about acknowledging that, certainly if you do have time, that there are some really beautiful things that you can do to make that pregnancy journey as beautiful as it should be. Like, I've never felt better, and I want that for other people. Like, I know firsthand that it's possible, and I think it is about doing a little bit of work, but creating the space so that you can do that. With the belief system that it doesn't have to be miserable, or that birth doesn't have to be, you know, really painful or risky. Like, it can be a really beautiful experience. And certainly, like, for me, when I did a lot of research around even how, like, the UK operate in the birth space with home birth and hypnobirthing, like, that for me was a real eye-opening, in that I just know what I know because I live in Australia, and you just know what you know because you're in the US, whereas different cultures look at it really differently. So it's really beautiful to see that, because then you have this, you know, this realm of possibility that's infinite, essentially, around how beautiful your pregnancy and birth could be.
That's amazing. Thank you again. And thank you for showing up for yourself, but all these beautiful mamas to be. And I am so grateful. And I know our listeners are going to be so grateful for this episode and your wisdom and nuggets of knowledge for us today. And I always close every episode asking this question of, how can we be of service as an act of gratitude in return for you today?
I think just exactly what we discussed before, for those that are embarking on the journey of motherhood, to take the time out to do the work to make it a beautiful experience, and to get some support, and to sort of step outside your current worldview of what pregnancy and birth is, because there are so many other ways it could be. And certainly looking at other cultures, or surrounding yourself with really positive, you know, pregnancy and birth stories, is a huge part of it, because it can be a really beautiful experience, and birth can actually be so empowering and, you know, and natural, and the best way for baby to start its new life.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. It was so great to be here.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.